Thank you, worship team. I remember when I was a younger man. Sorry about that. I had a meeting. A fella came to see me. He made a special appointment to see me, and he wanted to talk to me about. Thank you. I'll need a little help here.
We'll let the tech team help you out.
Thank you very much.
Scissors, man.
Blue?
Sorry about
blue?
That.
We have blue.
Thanks.
How about Gorilla Glue?
Yeah, that'll work.
There you go.
Thank you.
Thank you for putting up with us, George.
Oh. Anyway, I was in my mid-20s, and this man came to me, and I thought it was odd that he came to me because he was probably in his mid-late 50s. And I thought, why is this guy coming to me? And he had a real anticipation and expectancy that I was going to help him. And what he shared with me just kind of blew me away. What he told me was, I've struggled all my life with who I am. I'm not sure who I am. I'm not sure where I belong. And I said, why is that? And he said, because I was adopted when I was a baby, and I never knew my real parent, my biological parents. And so I've always just had this sense of, you know, how do I fit in? Where do I belong? Whose am I? What am I? Where am I from? Where am I going? And he looked at me as if I was going to help him. And I remember that, you know, that feeling when you just feel like, I got nothing for this guy. I didn't have anything to give him. And I felt terrible. I felt terrible for him, and I felt bad myself because I realized I had nothing. And the reason I had nothing is because I was no better off than him. I hadn't grappled with my own identity issues. I didn't know where I was from. I didn't know who I belonged to. I didn't know what my family was. I didn't have a connection with family. I didn't know what my place was in the world. And so when he shared deeply, he was crying, you know. When he shared so deeply, I was dumbfounded because I didn't have any tools or any way to process what he was trying to get through to me. So I want to talk to you today about your identity, and as I do it, I want to be careful and I want to be gentle because I realize, and this is my opinion, you could disagree with me. This is some of the most powerful, emotionally powerful stuff we can deal with. And it's evidenced in our day-to-day life. It's evidenced in what we read in the newspaper, what we see in media, is we're all, on one level or another, struggling, processing through, learning to understand who we really are and what our identity is. So I want to be gentle. So if you hear me say something that seems harsh, or if you hear something in the text that seems harsh, I want you to know we're together in this. We're trying to work through this together. I want to use care, and I want you to know I'm on your side because I'm working through this too. If you look on your outline there in the center, it says my identities, and there are lots of ways of thinking about this. There's lots of ways of looking at this. But here are just a few of them that we are all grappling with. Where am I from? You meet somebody and they say, where are you from? Right? Where are you from? Where are you from physically, but where are you from emotionally? Where are you from culturally? Where are you from spiritually? Where are you from financially? Educate? What's your background? Who are your parents? This is huge. Who are your parents? I had a guy come to me just this week. And I won't go into his whole story, but he's grappling with, who are my parents? Who am I? Where did I come from? We're much more aware now that a lot of us are struggling with our gender. You know, am I a man or female? What does it mean to be a man? What does it mean to be a woman? A lot of us are grappling with our race, if not our own race, how we relate to the other and how we interact together and build a safe and a just society.
Especially
race,
in this country.
Yes, especially. And for a lot of us, you know, you get asked, well, where are you from? And then what's the next question? So what do you do? What do you do? What's your job? What's your profession? That's a huge part of our identity. And now we have this whole new thing. I don't know how long the word's been around, but you've probably picked up on it, this identity politics. Have you heard this new? It's a new word. And so using identity to develop political groupings. And so now everyone they're identified by their who they are by their politics. It's very, very interesting to me. But it's huge and it's real, and people are willing to die for their political identity. And it could be 101 other things. And then, as I was reading about this, I discovered another, it's just a little factoid, is if you say, I'm a cowboy, this is my group, this is who I am, this is who we are, or I'm a plumber, or whatever the thing is, within that grouping, you're either a leader, a follower, or you're independent, or a drifter. So you put all this together, and it becomes very complex, and it interacts in lots of different ways. And as we come to the passage today, the book of John, we discover that Jesus has been talking with his own people, Jewish people, and they are arguing about what? Their identity. They're arguing about who they are. They're arguing about where they come from, and they're arguing about their place in the ethnic, religious, social community, and they're not getting along. It's not going well. If you look at the part in your outline in the top right where it says overview, in John's gospel, Jesus is repeatedly revealing his identity. He's coming to his own people, and he's saying, this is who I am. This is whose I am. This is where I come from. This is what I've come to do. I am God's Messiah and unique Son. He's revealing his identity. And some of the people in this chapter believe and say yes, then they embrace at least halfway, at least part of the way. Yeah, Jesus is kind of who he is. It could be he's the prophet, you know. Maybe he's the Messiah. I don't know. And they're agreeing. Some are agreeing. But many more are rejecting Jesus' identity. And not only do they reject his identity, but what he presents as his identity is so, I don't know if it's opposite or different than what they perceive about themselves. What he's saying to them their identity is, and what he's saying his identity is, it's so different. There's so much clash that they want to kill him. They want him dead. And I don't care who you are, whether you're here today or you're listening by television. I know, it's a joke. I like to say it. Look into the camera. Sorry. Whoever we are, whether you consider yourself agnostic or atheist or Christian or some other faith or no faith, whatever it is, all of us, every one of us, every continent, every political identity, every gender, every income bracket, we're all challenged by the identity that Jesus presents. We're challenged by the identity he presents of himself. Is it true or is it false? And we're challenged by the identity that he puts on us. I don't care who we are. We have to grapple with this. I've had so many adults come to me and say, who am I? Dealing with, wrestling with all these things, their parents and their gender and their race and their job and their politics, all of it. And so my advice for all of us is don't run from that. Deal with it. Do the work. Think about it. It's hard. It's painful. It can be frustrating, and it's very emotional work. But do the same work with Jesus and say, is his identity Is who he says he is it true? And what he says about me, is it true? And how do I fit into that? And this passage is going to help us do that. So pull out your outline and look on the left-hand side, and we'll read the text together. And it starts, and they're arguing over who's the son of Abraham, who's the son of God. And they're saying, we're sons of Abraham, we're sons of God. And Jesus is saying, not so fast, not so fast. Okay, starting in verse 37. I know you are descendants of Abraham, but you're trying to kill me because my word has no place in you. Verse 38. I speak what I have seen in the presence of the Father. So then, you do what you have seen with your father. He's saying our fathers are different. We have a different daddy. And they respond, our father is Abraham. And then Jesus says, if you were Abraham's children, Jesus told them, you would do what Abraham did. And we'll explore just a little bit what Abraham did. But now, you say you're Abraham's children, but now you're trying to kill me. A man who, what's his crime? A man who's told you the truth that I heard from God. Abraham did not do this. You're doing what your father does. You have a different identity. They say, we weren't born of sexual immorality, they said. We have one father. And then they said it with a deep guttural, God. Verse 42, Jesus said to them, if, big if, put a circle around it, if God were your father, you would love me. Wow. Wow. Game changer. History changer. If God were your father, you would love me, Jesus said, because I came from God and I am here. For I did not come on my own, but he, God, sent me. Why don't you understand? Why don't you understand what I say? And then he says this, because you cannot listen to my word. And then he explains, he gives it the identity of their father. Difficult, hard, challenging words. Verse 44, you are of your father, the devil, and you want to carry out your father's desires. Who is your father? He was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he tells a lie, he speaks from his own nature, because he is a liar. And your father is the father of all lies. Yet, because I tell you the truth, you do not believe me. Then he asks them this rhetorical question. Who among you can convince me of sin? If I am telling the truth, why don't you believe me? And then finally he says this. The one who is from God, and that's what they're discussing, that's what they're debating, that's what they're arguing, their identity. Are they Abraham's children? Are they the children of God? Or something else? The one who is from God, Jesus said, listens to God's words. This is why you don't listen, because you are not from God. Very clear, very direct, very painful, very challenging, very hard words. But what Jesus is doing in this passage is he's giving us a spiritual paternity test. If you can do it, if you can afford the $100, go to ancestry.com, find out who your ancestors are. It's fun, it's exciting, it's interesting. And people are spending millions of dollars to figure this stuff out, right?
It changes their lives.
It can, it really can. And so Jesus, what he's doing here is he's saying, you're saying Abraham is your father, you're saying God is your father, I'm going to give you a paternity test. And the test is going to prove, beyond a shadow of a doubt, who your father is. What a great test. And so today we're going to look at the test. And if you go home and someone says, how was church? You say, fine, the worship was great. Was there a sermon? Yeah, what was it about? It was about spiritual paternity test. What's a spiritual paternity test? I want you to be able to remember these three things. Spiritual paternity test is about how do I live, who do I love, and who do I listen to? That's the spiritual paternity test that Jesus gives in this passage. And cut the Bible part off of this, whether you believe in God, you believe in the Bible or not, all of us have to answer these questions. These are powerful. These are life-changing. This is as real as it gets. Whether there's a God exists or doesn't exist, I want you to think about these questions on your own. How do I live? Who tells me how to live? Why do I live the way I do? What's my life all about? Why do I choose to function and behave and pattern myself this way or that way or do this or not do that? Or why is this right or wrong? Or why do I go there and not here? How do I live? Huge question, because that's a central part of our core identity is how we live. And then we all get this: who do I love? Your identity is completely surrounded by this. Who, not just what am I doing with my life, but who do I love? Who is most important to me? Who pulls on the heart, my emotional heartstrings? And then lastly, who do I listen to? Because depending on how you live and who you love is completely, totally, entirely dependent upon this question. Who am I listening to? Who's telling me who to love? Who's telling me how to love? Who's telling me where to live? Who's telling me how to live? The one who you're listening to. Who are you listening to? You say, well, that's very interesting, George. Where do you get that? And my answer is, I get it, lift it right out of the text. And you'll see it if you look down in the next box. So that's the test. And you can ask this of yourself. You can ask this of your children. You can ask this of anybody. How do you live? What is that? Who do I love and who do I listen to? And now this is the test key. And a key for a test is these are the answers to the test from the text, from the Bible, from Jesus' words. Look at the test key. They're debating over what? Who are God's children? Who are the children of God? And the Jesus' community is saying, we are the children of God. So how do you know that? Because we're children of Abraham. We're children of Abraham. We are the children of God. And Jesus is saying, no, you're not. You are the physical descendants of Abraham, but you are not the spiritual descendants of Abraham. And they don't like it. But anyway, here's the test. Here are the three things that we can know that we're children of God. We can use this for ourselves, and we can use this with someone else. And we can use it with a community. We can use it with a culture. Here's a test of God's children. Look at verse 39. If you were Abraham's children, Jesus told them, you would do what Abraham did. What did Abraham do? I went through Genesis chapters 12 through 25 twice this week to try to understand this. What did Abraham do? Abraham, everyone agrees, was a man of faith. Abraham put his faith in God. Abraham put his trust in the God who appeared to him. I lost track of how many times God appeared to Abraham. It was seven times. And each time that God came to him through the prophet or through the pre-incarnate Christ, every single time, Abraham bowed down, brought him in, provided hospitality, listened to, and obeyed what God said every single time. And the book of Romans, the book of 1 John, the book of Galatians all agree Abraham was a man of faith. How do you tell the children of God? They live by faith and they obey Jesus. It's the first thing. And so I have to ask myself, do I live by Jesus' teachings? Am I living by Jesus' teachings? Am I in the Gospels every day and saying, God, what's your position on this social issue? God, what's your position on this? What should I do about that? Where should I go with this? How should I deal with this? How should I interact with my own longings and yearnings? What do you say to me, Jesus, in your word? God's children, the true children of Abraham, the true children of faith, the true children of God, live by faith in God. And then secondly, the second key or the second point in the spiritual paternity test is in verse 42. Look at verse 42. And I think this is profound. Jesus said to them, this isn't, religion doesn't say this, Christianity doesn't say this, no church says this. Jesus says, if God were your father, spiritual paternity test, if God were your father, you would love me. How do we tell the children of God? The children of God love Jesus. And so I have to ask myself, do I love Jesus above all else? I don't mean do I love him a lot, he has a place in my life, he's really important to me, that's my religion. No. Do you love him with all your heart? Because he's saying if you love the Father, you will love his Son. And this theme is brought out repeatedly in the New Testament. Do I live by faith in God? Do I love Jesus? And the third key in the spiritual paternity test is in verse 47. Look over on your outline. It's the last verse there on the left. Jesus says, the one who is from God listens to God's words. How do I know if I'm a child of God? I know I'm a child of God if I am listening to him daily. If I'm listening to him all the time, if I'm taking the instructions that he gives and living by them. And on one hand, as I study this passage, it's like it's a difficult passage for me, but then when I break it down like this, it's really pretty simple. Am I living by faith in God and doing what he says? Do I love his Son? And do I listen to God's word? That's how you know whether you are a child of God or not. And that's how you can tell if someone else is a child of God. I don't know why as I was studying the passage, this song, I like to listen to music. This old song, Doobie Brothers, or no, excuse me, the Allman Brothers, came to mind, and some of you, da 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 da. Da 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 da. Jesus is just all right. Yeah. So you know, I think it's a beautiful song musically. It's a great song, but it's inadequate because Jesus isn't saying you just need to be all right with me. He's saying you need to worship me as the Messiah. You need to accept me, my word, as the word of God. You need to love me above all else. And if you look at the box in the center, their center bottom, where it says, "The Jesus we love." I won't go through all of this, but it's not, we're not just saying, I give mental assent to Jesus, or I tick the box that I'm a Christian. It means you're accepting the Jesus in the just in these 10 verses. Not the whole book, not the whole chapter, just these 10 verses, he's saying, I'm the Word of God. I'm sinless. I'm pre-existent. I'm with God. I come from heaven. I'm sent from God. I'm repulsed by evil. I'm sinless, and I am the embodiment of all truth. It's not this Jesus of, you know, the New Age or I don't know what you say. He's more than all right. He's everything. And the stakes are very, very high. Look at that bottom rectangular box. The stakes are high. If Jesus is the Lord, if he is the Messiah, if his identity as he presents himself is true, then I embrace that identity and I say, I come to be a son of God through faith in Jesus. It impacts my identity, but guess what? My identity impacts my destiny. It's not just about here and now and how I feel about myself and my own self-identity. It impacts my eternity. It impacts my destiny for the rest of my life. It's the difference between the love of God and the hate of hell. It's the difference between the truth of God and the deception of the enemy of our souls. It's the difference between life, spiritual life, and spiritual death. All these words are lifted right out of this text. It's the difference between being a son of God or being a child of Satan. The stakes cannot be any higher. So here's our spiritual paternity test. Do I live by faith and obey God? Do I love Jesus? Do I listen to his word? Turn your outline over, if you will, and let's look at this back section. One thing that really sprung up to me as I read through this is that it's very possible for me and for you and for us and for a culture, for a whole race of people, nation of people, to be very sincere in their belief and in their identity and to be very wrong about it at the same time. And I have to admit that I have done this. There have been things and times in my life where I was so sure, I was so convinced that I was right and you were wrong or the other person was wrong. And guess what? I was the one who was wrong. And so this conflict that Jesus is having with his hearers, they staked their lives, their fortunes, their sacred honor on the fact that Jesus was not who he said he was and that they were children of Abraham. And Jesus says, no, you're not. You're wrong. So it's possible for me, it's possible for the other to think I'm right. But if we're not evaluating and judging ourselves by this paternity test, by what Jesus says, the Son of God says, we can be completely and totally incorrect. So that's easy to say, oh yeah, those guys, they're wrong. No, no, no. I want you to think about you. What is your core spiritual hope and identity? And what have been some of the false hopes that you have put your faith and trust in? They put their faith and trust in Judaism. They put their faith and trust in their ethnic lineage. They thought that they were, because they were circumcised Jews, they were in the club and that they were children of God. And Jesus says, that's not what it's, at the end of the day, that doesn't help you. What have you put your trust in? I think I, in years past, have put my trust in Christendom, in the religion of Christianity. And that's a false hope, because there's no hope and there's no salvation in Christendom or in Christianity. There's hope and there's new life in Jesus, in the Christ, but not in Christendom. And many people falsely put their hope in a religion or in a church or a denomination or whatever it might be. How have I mistakenly placed my identity? What have I put it in? And now look at that bottom box. Jesus, why so harsh? Why so harsh? I dare say that if we read this passage on the radio today in Portland or any number of cities in America, they'd turn the volume down and you'd be sued for what? They'd say, that's hate speech. That is hate speech. That is intolerant hate speech. And if there's anything we can't tolerate, it's intolerance. It's the way we think these days. And they would say, Jesus is, I think of it like this. You've seen these movies. I've seen it lots of times. A guy comes into a bar like this, and he pulls a gun. And the other guy immediately pulls a gun. There's two guys pointing their guns at each other. And they say, you put your gun down, or I'll shoot. And the other guy says, no, you put your gun down, or I'll shoot. And they stand there sweating and yelling and spitting at each other for a couple of minutes until finally somebody shoots or somebody puts their gun down or, you know, whatever happens. And this is kind of what's happening here. The Jesus is with his people, and he's got his gun pointed at them. He says, you're going down. And they say, no, Jesus, we're not going down. You're going down. And they're in a death grip with each other. And so, and Jesus says to them, direct language, you are of your father, the devil. I don't know how you get more harsh or direct or radical than that. Why is Jesus so harsh here? In our culture would say, he's not just harsh, he's wrong. He's hateful. He has no right. He has no authority. This is unloving. This is unjust. This is unkind. This is inequitable. This is terrible. Jesus is a bad guy. So why is this? And the best way I can answer that question is to tell you a personal experience, several medical experiences I've had. I went to the doctor once and I said, I'm having headaches, I can't hear out of this ear, I got a ringing in my head. And they sent me to specialist. I kept getting further up on the hill, you know, over there. And finally, I'm at the top guy. And they said, we're going to have to run a bunch more tests. I said, why, doc? What do you think it is? I think you have a brain tumor. Brain tumor? Well, you think, what will happen if I have a brain tumor? It's like, well, it's really serious. Like, well, what could happen? You could die. You could die. So, okay. So we won't know until we run these tests. We're running tests today, right? We won't know if you're going to live or die until we run these tests. So just go home for a couple weeks, take it easy. And we'll let you know what the tests come back saying. So I had to go home and like, am I going to die? You know, do I have a brain tumor? What's going on? Well, it turned out the tests came back and I didn't have a brain tumor. But I had a personal emotional reaction against that doctor. I thought, who does he think he is telling me I have a brain tumor and I might die? It was an insult in a way. There was another time I went to the doctor, I went to the specialist, the heart guy. I said, I think I'm having a heart attack. I think I'm going to die of a heart attack. I got all these symptoms. I got all this pain. I got all these problems. They said, well, we're going to have to run a bunch of tests. Why? Because maybe you do have a heart problem. Well, what if I do have a heart? Well, you could die. I didn't like to hear that. So they ran the tests, and turns out my ticker's fine. But I really thought I was dying of a heart attack, and he told me, yeah, you could. I didn't like that. There was another time, more recently, I had all these symptoms, and I went to the doctor, and I said, I think this, I have this symptom, I have that symptom. They said, we're going to have to run a bunch of tests. And because we're afraid that you have this kind of cancer, and if you have this kind of cancer, you could die. Kills a lot of guys like you. Okay, so let's take the test. They take the test. Tests come back. You don't have it. Oh, good. But I was upset for weeks and months. Like, what if I have this thing and it's going to get me, you know? What if? You know, why are they messing up my life? I'm losing sleep over this. Well, then finally another time I went to the doctor. No, I went to the doctor for something just totally routine. And the doctor says, you have this growth on your back and I'm going to run a biopsy. Why? Because they said, I think it's malignant. And we won't know until we run some tests. So they do a biopsy, they run the test, and they say, sure enough, George, you have the deadliest form of cancer known to man. And I said, what does that mean? So it means we have to operate. Well, what happens if you don't operate? You will die really fast. Kills millions of people. So they operated. They cut the growth out. And then they said, now we have to run some more tests, see whether we got it or not. Because if we didn't get it, you could die. So they did some more tests, and here I am many years later. I'm okay. They got it all. But so Jesus, here's what Jesus is doing. He's being the spiritual physician. He's saying, I'm the doctor. I'm running the tests. And if you don't get the cure that I have, you will die. And so everyone says, this doctor is terrible. He's horrible. He does not have a good bedside manner. He's disturbing my sleep. He's telling me that I'm not well. Exactly. Why? Because he's a good doctor. He's a loving doctor. He has your best interest in mind.
Best physician.
He is. He's the great physician. So everyone says, oh, Jesus can't judge me. Jesus can't do these tests on me. It's like, that's like me or a 10-year-old boy saying, I'm not going to the dentist. I'm not going to the doctor. I don't want them doing all that. It's like, well, kid, you're an idiot. If you don't do this, it's really going to prejudice your health. And Jesus is saying, I want to heal you. I'm offering you my life. I'm offering you my love. I'm offering you my wisdom. I'm offering you myself. I want you to be in my, I want to adopt you into my forever family. So hopefully, instead of saying, that's a bad offer and you're a bad person, you say, thank you. You're right. I accept the diagnosis and I will take the treatment. And in this case, the treatment is his person. But the challenge is I can't birth myself into the family of God. I have to be born again. I have to be born from above, and that's another message. So let's wrap this up. Look on your back, the back sleeve there, it says invitation. The invitation of this message and of this passage is to be a child of God. Become and be a child of God. And not just a halfway child. Be a sold out child of God. Accept and embrace your sonship, your daughterhood, as your complete and full spiritual identity. Be a child of God. And we could do a whole other sermon on the personality of the devil in this passage, and we haven't done that, but suffice to say, the invitation is to reject the devil, to renounce the devil and all of his evil works. How do you know he's the devil? He's a liar and a killer. And anything in your life that you want to hide, anything in your life that you want to keep on the down low, anything you don't want to express, reveal, that's part of the devil's untruth in us. And he's saying, and we want to reject the untruth of the devil and embrace the truth of God. We want to reject the death of the devil. Everything in your life that causes you death, whether it's what you eat or what you view or what you say or what you do or where you go or who you associate with, what you read, any of that diminishes the vitality of God's life in you is of the devil. Reject the devil and all his evil works. And embrace Jesus as the Lord. So if you have to put all of this, you know, what we've looked at today in this passage in John 8 together, I think we can say it in these last words. Love Jesus. Learn from Jesus. Live out his teachings. And make Jesus your core identity.